Welcome to tonight's episode of the Remso Martinez Experience. Before we get started, I want to go ahead and give a shout out to some of this episode's sponsors. From self-publishing to podcasting and passive income development, I offer ongoing self-development courses at Champion Pundit Academy, as well as one-on-one private consultations to take you from zero to hero in no time. Learn more at championpunditacademy.com. That's championpunditacademy.com. You want to know what you need more of in your life? Politics. Yeah, nobody ever said that. But if you've got to go ahead and spend money on one nonfiction book, it's got to be the ultimate clash of wisdom, awesomeness, and then obviously the politics. But why not a little bit of comedy? Why not a little bit of a memoir? Why not something that's going to make you say, hey, I actually enjoyed reading this. I laughed. I learned something in the process. Check out my book. It's an Amazon bestseller. You may have heard of it. It's Stay Away from the Libertarians. It talks about all the things you think you might know about libertarians, plus a lot of things that I bet dollars to donuts you don't know about. You can get it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble online. So go on right now. You can get it in print or ebook or Kindle or whatever you call it. Just go out and get it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble online today. It's Stay Away from the Libertarians by Remso W. Martinez. Happens to be me. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Remso Martinez Experience. Welcome back. As always, I'm the person that your girlfriend thinks of each time you're making out. Remso W. Martinez, welcome back to the show. It's been a little while since we came out with another episode. I kind of like this, you know, consistent, non-consistent thing that we're doing right now because ultimately, let me give you a little bit of background as to what was going on back when we were doing the show like every other day for almost 4 or 5 years. I mean, things were, you know, they were real hot and steamy, and we were going through that honeymoon phase, and then at some point you got sick of me and I got sick of you, and we all had to grow up, and then we were like, Daddy, I can go and be an actor in Hollywood, and then one of us had to go get a real job. And now here we are, just having excellent conversations whenever we get the chance. And tonight's going to definitely be one of them. I know what you're thinking. Remso, on Twitter, you said you and politics were getting a divorce and you hope that she never called back. Well, just like a crazy ex-girlfriend who's crazy in the head but awesome in the bed, you got to come back to it every once in a while. You got to be good at something. Everyone's got that one thing that they hate to love and love to hate. And when it comes to libertarian politics, it's kind of like that itch that you just got to scratch. Some people call it an infection. You should probably get treated. I call it life. And tonight is no exception. By the way, some of you, I will address this now before we get going. Some of you were asking recently, when's the book coming out? That is book number 2. It's How to Succeed in Politics and Other Forms of Devil Worship. I'm moving the day it's available back. It will be available March 2020. So you're welcome. There it is. We'll start getting more interviews out there. I'm going to go ahead and put out chapter 1. Within the next couple of weeks, hopefully, once the edits come back. And, you know, here's the thing, folks. When you send a manuscript off for editing, it's a baby. So by the time I see my draft back, it'll already be getting its master's degree. Hopefully already hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. But, you know, just like every boomer out there, gotta get this millennial, go make me some money somehow. So go ahead and check out rwmartinez.com/book. You'll go ahead and get a copy of Stay Away from the Libertarians, which is still out and still live and kicking. And you can go ahead and see all the updates we're doing for How to Succeed in Politics and Other Forms of Devil Worship. So tonight, we have another candidate running for the Libertarian nomination. His name is Daniel Berman, a.k.a. Daniel Taxation is Theft Berman. And I'm looking at a photo of him right now. He's wearing a hat that says taxation is theft. Oh dear God! Everyone has a gimmick, but this is coming from someone that people thought my actual name was Rumsa Republic for several years, like I was some type of white rapper. So you know, maybe I should give him a little bit of credit. And yeah, that's about it. We'll go ahead and have an interesting conversation from here. Daniel, thank you so much for joining the show tonight. It's great to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So it says here on your Facebook page you're married, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so when does the divorce coming? Because usually when you wake up one day and say, honey, I'm running for president as a libertarian, conversations get kind of strange around the house. How'd you break it to her?
Well, you know, she's always known I've been kind of into some crazy stuff. I can call the libertarians crazy stuff, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, it's...
There's nothing normal going on here.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
It's just another, to her, I think it's just, it's a phase. He'll get over it. So she's putting up with it.
So this is your midlife crisis in her eyes.
I guess
there are like, you know, lesser productive things you could do. You could have gotten, you know, a much younger mistress, a much more expensive car. You could have started a sport that you would have been injured in after you spent, you know, hundreds of dollars getting into it. You know, running for president. Yeah. I mean, there are worse things, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, here's an interesting spin on that, too. So, because I'm very, very much opposed to doing anything with the government's permission. So
we have
a non-governmental marriage. So I'm not even sure if is divorce a possible thing, or would it just be what would you call it?
I need to think about this. Like, there's like a Game of Thrones marriage where if you get divorced, all you have to do is just walk out. So, wow, that's hardcore. I didn't know how crazy this was going to get, but you didn't even go to them for a marriage permission slip. So I got to give you kudos for that.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. And, you know, we think of like that as just like a normal thing, like, oh, yeah, you follow the program that they give you. You graduate high school, you go to college, you get married, you get a job and all this other crap. And it's like you follow all the steps and every single one you have to get, you know, some certificate from the government. And marriage is one of them. But if you think back to like, you know, this, it's really only pretty real. I mean, anyone who's alive today has had marriage certificates in their lifetime. But you know, when those were first created, it was really kind of a racist program to allow interracial marriages and stuff like that. Before then, it was really just the church is like, okay, you guys are married. That's it. No government.
You know, it's so funny you bring that up because years ago, and now I feel like I'm about to see my existential crisis coming on as I turn 25 this year. But years ago when like the show was in its infancy, I had Lucy Breton on. She was running for Senate in Indiana, and she also had the same thing going on. Her and her husband didn't want to get a marriage permission slip from the state of Indiana, so they just got married in their church. And whenever they needed to show that they were married, all they had to do was show that certificate saying that they were married by an ordained priest. And it's like, you know, that's one of those things that I always thought was a bit of a, you know, no-brainer issue. Like I'm a member of the United Methodist Church. So, you know, some people think that we're like super liberal, but I think we're a bit more conservative than others. And, you know, when it came to the LGBTQ issue, I was always like, you know, why can't we just get the government out of marriage entirely? Because, you know, right. Are we going to start having, you know, government permission slips for baptism? Because, I mean, right. We could just keep going and going and going, and it's already ridiculous as is, but why not just take them out of the whole thing? Because, you know, honestly, like, I'm pretty anti-marriage in the sense that I don't think the government should be involved at all. So, you know, two dudes, five women, you know, you want to marry a doll or something. Like, man, you do you, but, like, stay the fuck away when it comes to this.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's like, you know, every time, and there's always a good excuse for it. You know, never let a good tragedy go to waste. Somebody, you know, somebody came up with like, oh, we don't want to be with each other anymore. We want to get a divorce. And then they would fight over, okay, but that's my house, or that, you know, then they would start fighting over property. And so these are the reasons that government came along and said, okay, we will regulate marriage. And when there's a separation, these will be all the rules that govern who gets the property. And of course, everybody was like, well, we're not happy with that. So then they started getting prenups. But it's, you know, it's government's solution to everything is like, okay, well, let's just kind of prefabricate everything and stuff everyone into a cookie cutter.
Yeah, absolutely. And
if you don't like it, too bad.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad that we kind of went on this tangent for a minute because I want to know a little bit more about you. We folks, you know, full disclosure, we have not spoken. So this man might be the Antichrist or Charles Manson for all I know. But so far, you know, I'm kind of digging his whole thing. But Dan, kind of tell me, how long have you been a libertarian? You know, what kind of prompted you to say, hey, I'm going to run for president? And, you know, what's your whole thing, man? Because I don't know if your parents, you know, legally named you taxation as theft, or if that's like, you know, your phase of going through the, you know, the pop star firm formerly known as Prince,
right,
type of thing. Like, so, what's going on? Tell me a little bit about you.
Yeah. So as far as my middle name, I'm actually, you know, it's the same thing as a marriage. I don't ask government for permission. So that's, I haven't asked the court to change my name, but it's, as far as legal rules are concerned, you're actually legally allowed to, like, that's a recent thing too. Like, you didn't have to use to go and ask the government for permission to change your name. You would just start using a new name. I am, you know, Robin of Loxley. That's like, and if you look at how names used to be, it's like it would be a family name. They still call it family name when you travel around the world. Like, instead of here, they say last name. This is all just this big system that's set up to track us. But anyway, so without going too far into that tangent.
Folks, you can call me Beto from now on. I'm stealing that. Beto Ramso Martinez. I kind of like it. Anyway, I mean, please continue.
As long as you're publicly known as that, I mean, you might not be able to get it on your driver's license or your passport or anything, but that is your name. You are legally allowed to represent yourself in contracts and everything else as that, as whatever name you proclaim to be.
Absolutely. And for the record, this is why I always said that Prince was one of the most libertarian pop stars ever, because he made himself into a symbol. That's not just an Eminem lyric, folks. Like, that was a thing. That's history. Go Google that shit.
Right.
But I digress. Please continue.
So I kind of grew up in Commie, California. I was very kind of left-leaning just because, you know, I was, my mom was kind of always working with charities and donating to, less fortunate and everything else. And so I was kind of like of that, like, yeah, we should be helping out and solving the world's problems. And I remember asking my mom once, well, if the government has so much money, why don't they just print it and give it to everybody and solve the problem? And of course, that's before I understood inflation and all this other stuff. So, you know, you make mistakes, you grow, you learn. Then I moved to Texas and I became a Texan. I now identify as a Texan. And I kind of became, yeah, I kind of, Ron Paul kind of convinced me to be more Republican. And, you know, kind of going through this whole process, once I really got into kind of politics, I voted for Obama the first time, which I'm ashamed to say. I realize, okay, the people running the Democrat Party and the people running the Republican Party, they're both a bunch of lying buffoons. They have no idea what they're doing. They're just stealing from us and doing whatever they're lying to us however they can to get our votes so they can steal our money and spend it on whatever mansions they want to build. So I got fed up with that, and then I kind of found the Libertarian Party. So you asked and made the presumption of how or when did I become a libertarian? I actually don't identify as a libertarian, oddly enough. Because
we're breaking news, motherfuckers.
Here's the thing. If you ask anybody, by the way, you can go to theonlyreallibertarian.com because there is only one real libertarian.
Holy shit. Do you own that?
No, it's Clayton Hunt. He's out of Texas. He's out of Houston. But his whole thing is, you know,
I've bought a lot of website domains just to sit on them. I'm really shocked I did not buy that one at some point, but please continue.
It's, you've heard of the world's shortest political quiz. That one's actually only one question. So go check that one out. there's this thing within the Libertarian Party. Oh, that's not really libertarian. You're not a real, and like everyone's fighting over what a libertarian is. And realistically, I mean, you look at the state parties and the national party, they've all got a different platform. I mean, they're very similar in many ways, but they're all different. They all disagree on things. And I don't know a single libertarian who can go into any convention and say, I agree 100% with the platform. There's nothing I would add, nothing I would remove.
That makes a lot of sense. And, you know, one thing I do want to clarify is that, you know, and I bring this up in my book quite a bit, like in the first book, folks, which you can get on Amazon and Barnes & Noble online today. Stay away from libertarians. Ka-ching. you have to understand, like, when it comes to libertarianism, a lot of people treat it as, you know, a pseudo secular religion. But, you know, when we compare worldviews, it's always going to be fractured. That's why anything created by man is imperfect. Conservatism, progressivism, communism, especially libertarianism doesn't, you know, it's not it's still fallible when it comes to that type of stuff. And, you know, like, for example, one thing I bring up in the book is the whole immigration issue. Like, I'm not like, you know, you have like the Hans Hermann Hoppe closed borders folks and you have the open borders libertarians. You've got the ones that say it's the state's only job. Then you say the state has no function, therefore the border should be open. And I'm kind of like in the middle. I'm just kind of like, you know, right. We have countries, we have nation states. They've always historically been there. And this is what happens when you have open borders. But this is what also happens when you have closed borders. Does it make my opinion more or less libertarian? It's really complicated because unlike a religion which has, you know, absolute dichotomies and principles and everything else, libertarianism doesn't really settle on that. It leaves things half empty or half full, so to speak. It says you should not impede, you know, the free movement of individuals who are self-autonomous, but at the same time, you should respect the property rights of other people. And then that leads into a whole other thing. You know, can the government own property? Or should you, a farmer in Arizona, put up your own Trump wall? I mean, things like this get complicated. That's why, you know, years ago, I kind of stopped fighting the whole who is more libertarian than now pissing contest, because ultimately, I think everyone's kind of shitty. So it just makes things easier to come to that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's you know, like you said, there's that. There's the abortion. There's the death penalty. Holy shit, I got in trouble just because I wanted to bring up the discussion of, you know, all these anarchists are out there, self-proclaimed anarchists who want absolutely zero government. And there was this guy who announced himself as a pedophile, and everybody was, or I guess he announced that he actually did something
Was he running for Congress?
I don't think it was that guy. I think it was just another guy who was just posting, you know,
because that guy was literally in my district. He was on the ballot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Talk about something close to home. Am I right?
Yeah. No, this guy, he actually did something that was like they called the cops on him. The cops showed up, took the daughter away and all this other crazy stuff. And I proposed the question of, you know, it was the way that I phrased it that got me into trouble. But, you know, okay, we have anarchists here who are supporting the police coming in to take this person away and prosecute them. And at the same time, these people are saying we should have absolutely no government. And, you know, why are they using government to solve their problem instead of saying, you know, kind of the agorist approach, let me resolve my problems without using government?
Yeah, why not just go hang the pedophile yourself?
Exactly. And, you know, they point out valid reasons like, well, no, if you do that, then the police are going to come after you and all these other, you know, valid reasons why that's not a great way to handle things. But it's just really awesome to see that, like, you know, even within the libertarian circles, you have all these people who are self-proclaimed purists of one form or another, minarchists, anarchists. And at the same time, like, you know, we're supposed to be very logically consistent. And at the end of the day, people are, you know, if you pick the right subject, people's emotions will come out and say, well, I'm anti-police, but I hope the police show up at this guy's house and shoot him. Or I'm anti death penalty, but I hope this guy hangs. And so you see,
yeah,
that,
I mean,
like, you
know, it's like every gangbanger is fuck the police until they get shot. Or mom gets shot, or your homie gets shot. I mean, we live in a very, right. Like, it's okay to be fallible. It's okay to, you know, say that you support one thing, but you support another. Like, we're very contradicting people. And, you know, the way it really comes down to, and this is why I think, you know, ultimately, whoever is the LP nominee is really going to have a lot of shit to deal with. Like, I feel bad. Like, if you get it, like, man, I'm going to be praying for you, because I would not want that in a million years. But today I was actually I was getting ready for this interview. I was just doing a little bit of research on the whole field of LP nominees. And, you know, for example, like I had Kim Ruff on a while ago, and 2017 was the year I basically went to war for Arvind Vohra. I got almost 500,000 people to sign a petition to basically force the LP National Committee to condemn him on StandUnited.org. And, you know, here's the thing. Like, what's the difference between ideologies of, let's say, you know, and I know I'm talking about your competitors, so just bear with me for a moment. What's the difference in ideology when you compare a Kim Ruff to an Arvind Vohra? There's not much gray area there. There's not much gray area between me and them when it comes to the issues. The problem is how are we going to discuss this with non-libertarians? You have someone who is very polite, and I very much enjoyed our time speaking together with Kim Ruff. But then you have someone like Arvind Vohra who, you know, called people pedophiles and serial killers. He called for a school board shooting. He said that cops should be, you know, slaughtered in the streets. He said that if you pay taxes, you're essentially condoning the violence of, you know, condoning violence against millions of people. But, you know, here's my thing. It's like let's be rational, like functioning adults here. I want to know if Arvind Vohra paid his income taxes this year. Because if you go by his argument, if you paid your income taxes, you're a slave and you're supporting the war state and the police state and all this other stuff. Anyway, like, yeah, like I want to know if he paid his income taxes, because if he paid his income taxes, that means he's basically going up against everything he said he did not support. But if he did not pay his income taxes, that's going to cause a lot of problems with the FEC if he becomes the nominee. And then that becomes a giant liability on the entire party. So, right. Like, things like that we have to be, like, rational people about.
Yeah, absolutely. There's – and, you know, a lot of – to what you were talking about a minute ago was, I think, the messaging, which is what I've really focused a lot on. And actually, while a lot of the candidates are kind of you know, they're messaging to libertarians right now within the party, I'm actually – spending a lot of my time reaching outside of that. I'm actually taking this message to Democrats and Republicans, because the reality is if we sit in our echo chamber all day, we're not really helping anybody. You know, the chances of a libertarian win are very small to begin with, but if we only focus on winning libertarian votes, then like that's nothing. That is what it is. But the reality is, like, you know, we call them debates. We've been having these debates on the We Are Libertarian podcast, and most of us pretty much agree on just about everything. So it's not really a debate. It's like more like a, you know, a friendly gathering of people who just sitting around and saying how much the government sucks.
Yeah, it's kind of like Miss America. It's like, which one of you looks best in a swimsuit at this point?
Right. Right. But, you know, when I take to the streets and I kind of go to the Democrats and the Republicans, like I understand, like, if you just go up to them and say, hey, we want less government, their first question is, okay, but what about my health care? What about my sick grandma? What about the immigrants stealing my jobs? All these things that, you know, and most of them is just propaganda that's been stuck in their head. But those are the issues they're concerned about. And when you come at them with less government, the first thing they say is, but I have objections. And really, like, there's a way that you can approach these people and say, well, look, I understand what your concerns are. Let's talk about some realistic solutions to that and how less government would actually get you more of what you want. And then they start to see that and understand it and think about it a little bit more. So we're actually, like, spreading this message and getting people to see that and changing the way people see the function and role of government, which is, I think, the most important part of this whole thing.
Absolutely, because, you know, there's been this struggle for years as to whether or not the Libertarian Party is a vehicle for political progress or if it's for, you know, educational purposes. And you have people very much on both sides of it. My thing has always been, why not both?
Right.
Like, if you win at one, you're going to win at the other and vice versa. Like, what do you have to lose? Nothing changes. Well, you might as well make things a little bit better in the process. Speaking of which, with the time that we have left, I just want to cover some of the issues that we're seeing in the news right now, which I have also divorced myself from. But because of you, I had to go and watch MSNBC and Fox today. It's okay. I'm unharmed. Only my soul hurts right now. But let me see. How do I want to phrase this? As the potential president of the United States, when is it? When's it acceptable to start bombing Iran?
So this is anything when it comes to foreign policy is really difficult to answer. And I want to say this
from Iran or not?
No, absolutely not.
Please explain.
Because here's the thing, like, we're always being told, and like whenever it's on the news, we're always being told, you know, hey, there's a threat, there's a threat, there's a threat. And then we end up going to war and invading another country. They lied to us about Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, everything else. Like, they lied to get us into so many wars. And they, you know, the people on CNN and Fox News, they're not in the Middle East for the most part. Sometimes they'll send out, like, you know, somebody to go get some footage or fake some footage. But for the most part, all they're doing is they're reading press releases, which comes from the White House. The CIA is gathering all this intelligence, which they have, and then they say, okay, we have all this and we want to do something. Maybe we want to assault a country so that we can steal their natural resources or convince their dictators to do something that's going to profit for us. How do we do that? Well, let's convince our people that we should be going to war to them, to war with them, and maybe that'll put some pressure on them to cave in and agree to whatever we want. And this is what they do. So if you look at the news, how do we know how much of this is actually true? Like, are we being lied to about weapons of mass destruction again? Like, even if they showed us a picture of, like, some guy landing in Iran, walking out of the airport, and we see the whole – there's a whole, like, you know, 50-hour reality show about his whole journey to get there. How do you know that whole thing isn't staged when it's coming from the government that has a history of lying to us? So what I think is really important for any candidate who's, you know, not in this inner circle of, you know, Hillary Clinton probably knows what's going on because she's kind of already in there and she's not the president. But for any other presidential candidate who doesn't know this information, who's not privy to, like, you know, what the CIA knows, what the White House knows and all this other stuff, they really cannot make an informed decision on what to do.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you know, My Halliburton stock is going to go through the roof if we invade Iran. But at the end of the day, you know, as we've seen so often, I feel like this is the one issue that people are finally getting wise about. But no matter whether or not you're a Republican or a Democrat, you figure out that the more you learn about it, the more that your own team is responsible.
Right.
And I mean, President Trump, I saw this clip today, so I'm a little bit late. And folks, like, when I put up this episode, it'll be a few hours after Dan and I go ahead and, you know, discuss all this. But, like, you know, it's so funny that he can discuss the threats made against the United States by Iran and justify a potential armed conflict, but at the same time say that the military-industrial complex, which he called out by name, you know, always wants more. It's like we've become such a schizophrenic country. But then, right, again, I think we've always kind of been this way, whether we like to admit it or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you see this all the time when you know, a politician promises you something. Hey, if I get elected, I'm going to give you this, you know, and then as soon as he gets in, it's, you know, like Trump's wall. I'm going to give you a wall and Mexico is going to pay for it. And then as soon as he's in, OK, well, I got what I wanted from you. I got your vote. Now I'm just going to have to, like, pander and make up some excuse why you don't have it. It's the other side. It's because of them. It's, they won't let me have it. You know, we've heard the same thing with healthcare. Well, we would have done this with healthcare, but the other side won't let me have it. And the reality is, like, that's intentional, because next election cycle, if they give you everything that they're promising, what are they going to have to sell you the next time around?
Oh, absolutely. And speaking of Trump's wall, I kind of want to divot a little bit. Universal basic income. It seems like,
oh, yeah,
it seems like literally everybody has been discussing it in the Democratic Party. To put my bias out there, just so you know a little bit about me, I've always been kind of like, it's good on paper, like maybe like a macro level we could try it. But the UBI that the Democrats are putting out is kind of retarded, because it's like saying, let's go ahead and throw some alcohol on this giant, like, dumpster fire right now, because it's UBI, but it's almost no cuts in the welfare state. It's no cuts in Social Security. It's no cuts in anything. It's just, let's just give people money and then let's figure out why the rent is getting higher later.
Right. Well, here's my take on that. Slaves had UBIs. I mean, if you think about it, they had food and shelter.
Well, shit, I never thought of it that way, but please continue.
So, like, this is the thing, right? You know, we're if you think about what slavery is, it's you have to work There's no question about that. You have to work, and we're going to, in exchange for the labor that you give us, we're going to give you food and shelter and basic health care and some other stuff. That's what slavery was. You couldn't leave. Now, of course, we're all slaves to nature, right? At the end of the day, if I were the only person left on Earth, I would have to work to find my food, grow my food, you know, whatever. Like, we're all slaves to nature. We can't say that we're being oppressed in that way. But to be a slave to another person is a completely different story. And when you look at the way that our society is built, it's you have to work. I've traveled the world to some amazing places where people are completely self-sufficient. They don't have a lot of stuff. They don't complain that they're poor. They don't complain that they're in poverty, but they grow their own food. They kill their own chickens. They pull water out of a well and they're happy. Their lives are actually happy. Like, people think like, oh, we need computers and cell phones and all this, you know, 500 channels of cable to be happy. That doesn't make us happy. That keeps us entertained. That keeps us numb to the fact that we have to work these jobs that we absolutely hate. And some of us, like, I don't want to say everybody's job is terrible, because some of us like our jobs and we're improving technology. We're improving the world. We're bringing more technology to more people at cheaper prices. So, you know, some of these farms that I stayed at where people, they don't have jobs. They just grow their own food. Sometimes they take some stuff into a market, they trade it for some money, and then they have internet and electricity. So that's because some people were working hard to advance science.
Here's my one problem, though, and you know, definitely, you know, call me out after I'm done with this. But, like, you know, like, Dan, you and I have done our homework. Like, we know what basic, you know, kindergarten economics looks like when it comes to this stuff. But right. Sadly, like, and you know, I'm originally from the Southwest Arizona, and I've lived throughout the country. Sadly, we've got a large portion of our society, which I'm not gonna call them stupid, because I know someone's gonna say I said that later, but I'm just gonna say they're not as, like, financially or economically literate as you and I, and they're working in retail or fast food or trucking well into their 40s and 50s. And when they hear that their jobs are going to be automated away within a decade, they're like, well, shit, what do I do now? It kind of gets into that whole, well, just learn to code situation. Like, right. Some people are. Like, they're just going to by default. A lot of people are going to just be unemployed for a while. And if you want to see someone that's angry, look at a whole bunch of people who just missed their first bill.
Right. But here's the thing. And this is kind of like the transition into that, because it's very possible that these jobs are going to go away because of automation. But the fear that, like, people like Andrew Yang are pushing is that the jobs are going to go away, but the cost of living is going to stay the same. What they don't look at is actually the cost of living is going to go up, because now they're going to have to tax everything harder. But what they don't tell you is, hey, if you're struggling to survive right now, the reason for that is not because your job's not paying you that much. It's not because, you know, all these other, it's not because there are billionaires making too much money. The reason you're struggling to get by is because that paycheck that you're getting, the government is taking half of it. You're going to pay your rent and you have to pay property tax. You know, everything that you're buying, from food to your utilities and everything else, these are all taxed so much that this is what's really making things hard for you to get by. And if you get that out of the equation, now your life becomes actually easier to get by. And when you do that and you say, okay, well, wouldn't you like to have your life be easier? Like, wouldn't you like your cost of living to go down? Well, yeah, that sounds great. Most people would love that. And when you talk about universal basic income, the idea of your job being automated away, the reality is, if your job is automated away, that means you're going to get whatever you were getting for even less. Like, that means, like, imagine this, there's a car factory employing 100,000 people. They all lose their jobs because now the entire car factory is completely automated. What are they going to do? Continue to make 1 million cars a year and not sell them to anybody because nobody has jobs? Or are they going to lower the price of a car to $500 or $100 because it costs them absolutely nothing to make those?
Yeah. I mean, you make perfect sense of that. I'm just thinking of the things that people are going to yell at you when they're like, well, these people are saying they'll protect my job and they'll give me the free money, the quote free money. And you want to take that all away and you don't want to help me. And this is why, you know, especially as we wind down the show, This is why the Libertarian candidate, whether it's you or someone else, is going to have such a difficult job, because Gary Johnson, who everyone was like, oh, he's so likable. Like, he was crucified in 2016, and I didn't really like him, but like, I felt bad for him because I knew what he was. I knew who he was. I knew what he was doing. And all they focused on was, why do you want to legalize drugs? Illegal drugs killed my kid. Do you want to kill my kid again? Well, it's like, no, why was your kid doing something illegal that he knew would probably kill him? And then it was, you don't know what Aleppo is? And everyone became a geopolitical expert overnight.
Right.
Like, I really, like, whether it's you or someone else, like, best of luck, because that's a shit job. Why do you want to do it, and why should people take a chance on you in 2020?
So one of the big issues that I'm pushing right now is actually free healthcare. And this kind of gets into your point about messaging. You know, to the people who want this, first of all, you know, a lot of the Democrats that I've talked to, they're concerned. They're not coming at it from an economic perspective of, we need to fix the healthcare system. They're coming at it from a survival perspective of, I have a sick grandmother, I have diabetes, I have all these problems. It's a pre-existing condition, I can't get insurance. These are all valid concerns, but this puts them into survival mode. So even a libertarian, if you ask a libertarian who's hiking through the woods in the dead of winter, and he's going to freeze to death if he doesn't find some shelter, and he finds a cabin, he will break and enter, which is illegal, a property crime, to go into this house, and he might even steal some food just so he can survive. And it's not considered a crime because it's an immediate survival concern. And if you look at the people who are crying that, hey, I want this free healthcare, I don't care who you have to steal from to give it to me, those people are operating on that same type of survival instinct, right? It's okay to break the law a little bit. It's okay to do something that is a little bit immoral. Sure, it might be immoral to steal, but we're stealing from bad people, right? Because they say we're just going to steal from the rich, and it's for my survival, so it's okay. The reality is, a lot of these people that I've talked to, I sell them on the idea of free healthcare, which is not free like zero cost of acquisition, but free as in, we're going to get the government out of it, because right now, the government is the one that's saying you cannot go and buy your insulin online from another country, even though it's a tenth of the price, because we won't let you. Government is the one saying there are doctors and nurses in this country that are able to practice on you. They're able to give you basic diagnosis. They're able to do surgeries. They're able to do all this other stuff, but we won't allow that because they've been educated outside of the country, and we don't give them permission in this country. The government is the reason that you don't have access to healthcare. The government is the reason that you have to pay five times more because they have to hire all these nurses administrators. The government is the reason that we have limited options in medications, that there's no competition, and they're able to create monopolies and rip us off. So when I talk to a lot of the really left-leaning Democrats about this issue, they come around and they see, I get that. So what you're saying is, we have less government, we won't have to worry about this circus about who we're going to steal from to give healthcare to other people. We're actually going to be able to just afford it. And they're okay with that, because at the end of the day, it's survival, and they just need to get what they need.
Oh, man, you make a lot of sense, but the world makes very little sense. Dan,
I'm with you on that.
If people want to learn more about you, support your campaign and all that jazz, how could they do so?
So I've got a website at Behrman2020.com. That's Behrman2020.com. And of course, there's LegalizePineapplePizza.org, where I'm running a contest to give away
You shut the fuck up.
A year's worth of pineapple pizza, among other prizes.
Oh, my God.
Are you for or against?
Listen, man, like, here's the thing. Like, I want to claim neutrality. Not all pineapple pizza is created equally. Case in point, have you ever tried Little Caesars pineapple pizza?
I haven't had Little Caesars in 20 years, so I can't say I have.
That's such a bourgeois statement. Dan, hey, it was an absolute pleasure having you on. Best of luck in the race, and you know, the forum is yours each time, anytime you want to come on.
Awesome, thank you.
All right, folks, everything that Dan brought up, his website and his apostate Pineapple Pizza website. All those links will be in the show notes over at rwmartinez.com. And as always, go ahead and follow me on Twitter at remso4va. That's R-E-M-S-O-F-O-R-V-A. Follow me and I'll follow you back indiscriminately. This way we can go ahead and keep this pineapple pizza fueled conversation going. As always, I'm Remso W. Martinez. Check out everything and more at rwmartinez.com. Check me out, Remso W. Martinez, on Facebook, Minds, Gab, Twitter, anywhere that your, you know, millennial cousin knows. And we'll talk to you next time. Take care, America. Good night.